good day to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Courtney Cuff, Hidney Cutter gave me.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Hey, Cudahy, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. We discuss local and national Native news and events, and as you know, Wendy, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Native Roots Trading Post. We will be at the Minnesota State Fair starting Thursday, August 25th through Monday, September 5th, and we're excited to get going there and be there. So everybody come on down and check us out. We're going to be at the West End Market.
Yeah, we are definitely. Hey, a lot going on in the news here. Just less than an hour ago, there was a shooting at Mall of America, and I shared out a Twitter of that, and it was by the Nike store. And we just hope all our relatives are okay out there. And I guess there was a shooting at the Mall of America in Bloomington, Minnesota in December. I don't know. Does that sound right, Wendy Ogema?
I haven't heard about that, but I'm just surprised, honestly, that it doesn't happen more often. And with the climate of today and what's happening across the United States, I don't understand why they don't have metal detectors in and out of that, you know, going into the Mall of America. I just think that your purses have to be checked and you have to walk through a metal detector. And that's the world that we live in right now, and that's what has to happen to keep people safe. I'm sorry.
Or we could just ban assault weapons and have better gun control laws. Exactly. That would be good too, I think. But since clearly our government is not going to let that happen anytime soon, metal detectors are the next best option.
Mm-hmm. I think if you looked at that video I sent out, it looked like he had a pistol. And he was running shoot with a pistol. But no, I agree. Yeah. 100%.
It's scary out there. I mean, when I was in the city, I was in New York City with Robert's daughter, my stepdaughter, who I love very much. And we spent some time in New York together, just the two of us. And we went to two Broadway shows. And each show, we had to give them our purse. So they had to look inside it and feel it and make sure. And it went through the metal detector. And we had to walk through a metal detector. And you know what? I felt safe in the theater.
You know, that's an important thing to mention too. And, you know, but who's responsible for paying for that when it comes to things like schools and other public places? Then that's what the argument comes down to, is who's going to pay for those in our schools. So gun control is clearly still a problem here in this country. Robert, I do have a little bit of info here, updated just here, about just less than an hour ago. The police of Bloomington say the scene at the Mall of America has been secured, there does not appear to be any other places where the shooter is going. It's an isolated incident that they've released so far. I'm taking a look here at the Minneapolis Crime Watch or Crime Watch Minneapolis Twitter. There's several photos of police officers with rifles walking through the Mall of America, videos of people who were on lockdown there. Robert, I think you talked to somebody today who was on lockdown at the Mall of America.
Yes, I did. I'm kind of watching the video here. Okay, it's on repeat, sorry. Yes, I did, and they didn't know what was going on because they were on the other side of the mall. But I also saw some Twitter video of people running out of the mall.
Yeah, I think that this is going to expose the Mall of America, because I've kind of had the same thought that Wendy has. In my few trips, I don't enjoy large malls, so I don't go to the Mall of America very often. But every time I have been there, I've wondered, in the same way that I wonder, you know, when I send my daughter to school, what is their protocol for if there were to be an active shooter situation, and, you know, or is it every store for themselves, or what is their protocol? And I wonder if the situation is going to cause the Mall of America to update their security or their protocol for something like that. So we'll have to wait and see. As of right now, it doesn't appear that they found any victims. So hopefully that remains the case.
Yeah, definitely. When somebody's running around with a pistol, and the way this person was kind of walking all bouncy and everything, it's hard to hit anybody, you know? It's not a TV right. show. But when you have those assault rifles, like you said, Ogema and Wendy, you're shooting, you know, 100 rounds a minute, and it's big bullets. But, yeah, why don't we, if you got some more news here, we can move on to and talk about more, Ogema.
Yeah, I sure do have some more news. Those who care for the beaver, Wadukwad Amikwag, put out a press release today about the anniversary of Enbridge's breach on the LaSalle Valley Aquifer, which happened last year, stating that the construction of the Line 3 pipeline caused permanent damage. The press release states that the one-year anniversary of Enbridge's breach of the LaSalle Valley Aquifer at LaSalle Creek is upon us, and that they're memorializing this by taking on this information. There was a recent investigation done by this organization, Those Who Protect the Beaver and Partners, and they've revealed ongoing construction damage that they are requiring immediate accountability for. They're seeking an independent panel of scientists to study the frack outs, aquifer breaches, hydraulic disturbances, and ecological damages that were done. They are asking for an ecologically sound strategy for monitoring and or mitigation for this. They're demanding that this work no longer be trusted to Enbridge, Bar Engineering, nor state regulators who have continued to downplay the damage. There is a video that is available. Unfortunately, I did not have time to get that loaded up before we went live here, but there's definitely a lot of damage that's going on, including they did some high-resolution thermal imaging studies, and they detailed evidence of upwelling groundwater, and that groundwater was leaking for in upwards of, I'm not even sure. It doesn't list how long, but the water testing is also showing ongoing damage that happens. So these would be violations of state and federal law by Enbridge Energy during their construction of the Line 3 pipeline, and possibly violations of the law for their engineering consultants and contractors. So right now, there's nothing that they know of that can be done to stop the uncontrollable flows of welling groundwater, but we'll see what happens with that. But basically, the same thing that we say here on Native Roots Radio, that many of the predictions by Indigenous leaders, scientists, and water protectors have happened, when have come to fruition when it comes to the Line 3 pipeline, and this is a continuation of this. So make sure you check out the Wadukwad Amikwag page, or Those Who Help the Beaver, and you can find them on YouTube. There is a video available there, and I will go ahead and put that up on the screen, the link to that YouTube video for everybody today. Another note on climate that I want people to kind of get a heads up on is the it's called the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022, but there's actually quite a bit of jargon in this bill that would help with the climate. So there's a lot of shortcomings, but the bill would hopefully start to decrease oil and gas leasing provisions. And this is something that needs to be talked about, that people need to be aware of. In this same climate deal, there is funding, according to ICT. There's tribal provisions included in that bill as well. So the proposal increased funding for tribes and states, some up to $5 billion for climate-related planning and development, plus another $60 billion for targeted at climate justice infrastructure. And then I just want to let people know that Kentucky is and Northern Virginia are seeing some of the worst flooding that there is so far in their history. So if you got a chance and you want to send support, go over to kentucky.gov. The governor has set up a flood relief fund.
Yeah, not to mention, again, Pinigigi, Ogema, not to mention our sacred animals are having a big struggle too down down there too. Hey, you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. Up next, Melissa Olson. We got to get to chit-chat with Melissa. We'll be right back after this short break.
Stay with us.
Hey, Wendy, what are we doing for dinner after the show?
How about we go to J. Selby's on 169 Victoria Street in St. Paul? They have a delicious plant-based menu that's compassionate and environmentally sustainable.
I'm getting their spot-on vegan Big Mac, the dirty secret.
You can pick up and they deliver within a five-mile radius, or you can call them at 651-222-3263 or visit jselbys.com.
Well, you sold me, Wen. Let's go order at J. Selby's tonight.
I'm hungry.
I heard sex trafficking happens a lot in Indian country. What is that?
Here are some of the real reasons why sex trafficking happens in Indian country. Unequal gender roles that were forced on us by colonization. Communities don't have enough resources. Silence around domestic and sexual violence. Lack of attention and justice for missing and murdered indigenous people. There's a lot of behavior that keeps our communities out of balance. These are just a few true reasons why Native communities are targeted by traffickers. When these acts of violence happen in our communities, it opens us all up for exploitation.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
COVID levels may be falling, but the virus is still around. Stay healthy and up to date on your COVID vaccinations and boosters. Right now, everyone 6 months and older is eligible to get a vaccination, while everyone 5 and up is eligible for their booster shot. Plus, you're eligible for a second booster if you're over 50 or received an initial booster dose at least 4 months ago. Find a vaccination site by calling 651-304-9986 or visit vaccineconnector.mn.gov. This message brought to you by the Native American Community Clinic.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio. This is Spirit from Reservation Dogs. Get up and listen.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is brought to you by MN350, a grassroots organization fighting for climate justice.
Hey, we're here with Melissa Olson. And Melissa, geez, I've known you for quite a few years. You're a radio host, worked for McGeezy, and now you're heading off to New York. I just want to say one quick thing I just saw on Facebook. We missed some of the cast from Reservation Dogs. Did you see that at the powwow grounds? What the heck? I normally don't miss that stuff.
But like, you know, like maybe an hour. So huh. I saw the photos and I was just blown away. I'm like, man.
Right, exactly. Us cool people did not make it. But, you know, we I don't know if you heard about the shooting, but there was a shooting at Mall of America today about an hour ago. And we've been talking about that. It's just another one of those things that like Ogama brought up and Wendy brought up. It's just like we need gun control. We're not safe anywhere. And big places like the Mall of America, you know, Wendy and I were in Cooperstown, New York, and there was thousands and thousands of people there. And the new normal is not being in good big crowds, it seems like. I don't know. It's frightening.
For sure. I'm curious, do you have more details about what happened at the mall?
Well, it was a shooting. Go ahead, Ogama.
I was going to say, as of right now, they haven't found any victims. There was a shooting at the Nike store or around the Nike store. Police in Bloomington said that the incident is isolated, to their knowledge, to the one store within the mall. But last we heard, the mall was still on lockdown. This happened, yeah. I mean, what, only about an hour and a half ago, Robert?
Yeah, exactly. Less than. And, you know, with all this excitement, Melissa, do you mind, you know, introducing yourself to everyone? We're all over Turtle Island now, and we want people to know who you are.
Sure. Thank you so much. I am a citizen of the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe. My name is Melissa Olson. Aniket is my Ojibwe name. I've lived here in Minneapolis probably about two-thirds of my life. It's very much the community I think I feel most at home. Gee whiz, I don't know what else there is to say. I've worked in the community for a long time, probably this year goes something 27 or 28 years. Goes way back to when I started as a youth worker at the old Pillsbury Waite House, which was a community center in South Minneapolis that served a lot of the Native community at that time. So just been really proud to work in the community as long as I have.
You know, one of the things, too, I want you to mention is your great documentary, and I think that's what really inspired me to reach out to you a long time ago. Can you talk a little bit about that and where people can listen to it? Because it's still very valid and even more so valid these days, that great documentary you did.
Thank you so much. Thanks for those kind words. In 2014, myself and three other colleagues, women that I knew mostly through professional relationships, got together and decided we wanted to make a documentary about the experiences of our parents, our mothers specifically. Each of them were adopted out in the 50s or 60s and had been raised by white families. You know, it was such a balm, a healing moment for us just to have a peer group, just to talk and trade stories about our experiences. And that's really where the documentary was born. From there, we interviewed our parents, and they, some of them, at least one of the moms, shared her story for the very first time. So it was a special moment. It was a special project, I think, for each of us in our own ways. The documentary, it's an audio documentary, so it's sound. It's created for radio and for audio platforms. It's called Stolen Childhoods. It was produced at KFAI Community Radio in Minneapolis, edited by Todd Melby, myself, and Ryan Katz. And really, you can listen to it on SoundCloud whenever people can listen to it whenever they want. They can access it there. I think it's even downloadable there. Certainly, I know people have done that. But yeah, Stolen Childhoods. It's 52 minutes long. It was released in 2016. But I think it stayed what we like to call in radio pretty evergreen in terms of its content and hopefully its impact.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely one to listen to and really get a sense firsthand of how a lot of adoptees ended up, you know, during the 60s scoop and the 50s, as you said. And, one of the things for me is I have a different story of being adopted, but it's very rare. And it's good to hear that perspective, and everything, you know, isn't rosy, and especially mm-hmm. with our ICWA law being attacked right now.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I mean, it's such an interesting moment that we find ourselves in right now. You know, on one hand, the Secretary of the Interior, Deb Haaland, is, holding hearings in DC about, you know, sort of the truths of boarding school experiences. And that is probably those hearings and that tour around the country is going to be taking place probably over the next year. And so in a real way, you know, there is for the first time in many years, this widening recognition of the kinds of issues that child removal and child displacement has wrought across Indian country. But then on the other hand, we have this case that the Supreme Court has now agreed to hear called Breck. The case is called Brackeen v. Haaland, in which sort of those who are opposed to the Indian Child Welfare Act. And of course, the Indian Child Welfare Act was meant to sort of undo or at least prevent some of the harm done to Native families by placing Native children with Native families. You know, now we're seeing those allied against or opposed to ICWA, you know, pushing to have really like the some of the broadest provisions of the law ruled unconstitutional. So there is a big fight, and so we see these. I think it is probably a product of how divided our politics are right now. But it sort of gives me whiplash, right? So on one hand, these you know, Deb Haaland is really trying to push the matter into the public and bring awareness and potentially, you know, move towards some kind of you know, truth and reconciliation or something something more reparative. And on the other hand, we see the Indian Child Welfare Act being just attacked outright. So we're in an interesting moment in terms of where we are as it regards indigenous children and their safety and their well-being.
Yeah, definitely. We got less than a minute here before we go to break. I'd really like to crack open the egg and talk about just what's happening nationally with women's rights and things like that, because, you know, Native people have been attacked for 500 years, and it's almost right now back to, well, now people are getting more excited about it because it's affecting all women. But we want to talk about a little bit about our sovereign nation and what we can do to keep women's rights, you know. And it's abortion's part of it, but I'm telling you, for me, it's like the right to choose, you know. It's the right to have a woman as not being a second class citizen anymore. And we're going back on these religious doctrines that supposedly this Constitution is supposed to separate church and state. So why don't we talk a little bit about that when we come back, if you don't mind, Melissa?
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, we're here. Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake with Melissa Olson, Wendy, and Ogama. And we're just having a fireside chat by the by the microphone. So you're listening to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake.
Stay with us.
When we heal from our traumas,
when we face our fears,
let go of our addictions,
when we relearn our values,
when we live our teachings,
respecting our elders,
cherishing and honoring our children,
when we honor and take care of our spirit,
there will be no room left for sexual violence.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Don't fall for vaccine misinformation. Local medical professionals are available to answer any of your questions. Initial shots and boosters are safe for people who are pregnant and even young children. Right now, vaccines are available for anyone over 6 months of age, while boosters are available for anyone over the age of 5. This message brought to you by the Native American Community Clinic. Find a vaccination site by calling 651-304-9986 or visit vaccineconnector.mn.gov.
J&S Bean Factory is a Native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
Hey Minnesota, it's Brad Friedman, host of the Bradcast. We'll expose and make sense of all of our current political nightmares and more every weeknight at 7 on AM 950.
Hi, I'm Claire Ferreira, president and owner of Standard Heating and Air Conditioning. Ever since my grandfather founded Standard over 90 years ago, word of mouth advertising and referrals from our customers have always been important. That's why, after serving over 500,000 customers, we're proud to have a 4.9 star average rating out of 5 on our online reviews. Check them out for yourself and find out more at standardheating.com. That's standardheating.com.
And this month, Standard Heating and Air Conditioning has savings on a stick. Standard Heating has 3 state fair specials running now through Labor Day. First, take $30 off a furnace or AC tune-up, or double your savings to $60 off if you schedule both at the same time. Second is $50 off a qualified indoor air quality product with the purchase of a furnace or air conditioner. And last is AM950's favorite, where you can save $950 on a new AC or ductless system. Find all those offers and book your appointment today at standardheating.com. Standard Heating and Air Conditioning, providing the comfort you deserve since 1930.
Minnesotans age 65 plus might qualify for Health Partners Minnesota Senior Health Options. The plan includes personal support, coverage for medical prescription drugs and dental, plus over 30 extra benefits. Eligibility information is available at healthpartners.com/oneplan. Health Partners is a health plan that contracts with both Medicare and the Minnesota Medical Assistance Medicaid program to provide benefits of both programs to enrollees. Enrollment in Health Partners depends on contract renewal.
Hi, I'm Scott Chambliot from Chambliot Family Dentistry. We're the fear-free, shame-free dental office. If you're having a dental emergency, we'll try and get you in the same day you call, because we don't like to see anyone in pain, and we'll help you get through every appointment in the most pain-free way possible. As my daughter Rachel says,
if you don't see my dad, please see another dentist. Take care of your teeth, because they're the only ones you get.
Chambliot Family Dentistry in Hopkins and St. Paul. Find them online at ChambliotFamilyDentistry.com or call 1-800-FIX-MY-TEETH.
With a look at your AM 950 weather, I'm Patrick Lulia. Clear tonight with a low of 67, then hot sunshine Friday with a high of 92. Cafe Latte is unlike any restaurant you've ever experienced. Grab a tray and pick from their award-winning selections of soups, salads, sandwiches, and mouth-watering desserts. Cafe Latte, Victoria Street and Grand Avenue in St. Paul, or cafelatte.com.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is brought to you by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Well, we're here with Melissa Olson, and Melissa, we got a couple things to talk about. What's happening right now, but also I just want to, we have so many new listeners, and a lot of our listeners are our white supporters out there, and I'm wondering if you could just give a little back history of the 60s scoop and exactly what ICWA is before we move on to what's happening with women's rights right now, if you don't mind.
Sure. The 60s scoop is a term, I think, that describes sort of the same phenomena that happened here in the U.S. So in Canada, they talk a lot about the 60s scoop. In the U.S., in the late 50s, all throughout the 60s, and through much of the early 70s, Native children were being, the federal government was trying to sort of, what they called, quote unquote, stimulate the transracial adoption of Indigenous children. And the way that they did that, Child Welfare League of America got a BIA contract in 1957, a small contract to start. And they started, with a survey in hand saying that there were 1,000 Native children waiting to be adopted. And that program was meant to encourage white adoptive parents to consider adopting a Native child, because at that time, race matching, quote unquote, race matching was a practice in American adoption. And so, they were trying to sort of, reach as many white adoptive parents as possible. And they really worked hard at it for many years. And probably, in the U.S. between like 1957 and probably 1968, the research I did shows that probably in most of the Western states where there are large tribal communities, you're talking about 400 children being adopted a year in each of those states. So somewhere between 15,000 and 20,000 children. And a lot of these adoptions, of course, were coerced outright. It was the 50s. And so there was a lot of stigma attached for young women who were not married to give up their children, whether they were white, Native, or African-American. And, you know, so there was a lot of coercion in these adoptions, shame and stigmatization of unwed pregnancy, quote unquote unwed pregnancy. And so there was, you know, following, we talk about the boarding school era, really 1880, probably right through World War II. And so the adoption era comes just right after that. And we see the same, we see similar, a similar attempt to assimilate to assimilate Native children and to detribalize Native people on the whole through child removal. I don't know. That sounds like it's a little wordy, but I hope no. that helps describe it a little bit.
Well, and again, too, it's another attempt at genocide of our people in boarding schools and adoptions and just to wipe us out. And but, you know, and the ICWA laws really came about and really to protect families to stay together. And I think that's what was happening in the 50s and 60s, where they were separating their family.
Yeah. So one of the things that happens is that, you know, by 1968, you know, the push, you know, tribes and the push for self-governance and, you know, self-determination, and it was just starting in the late 60s, you know, that forced like the Child Welfare League of America and those folks to stop what was called the Indian Adoption Program. But what happened, which was really significant, is that foster care really started the sort of fostering out of Native children to white homes, you know, became very, very, very common. So something like one out of four Native children were in foster care in the mid-70s, just an outrageous number of people. And the Indian Child Welfare Act, in addition to trying to really end this kind of displacement through adoption, also came about to stem the tide of the number of children who are just being placed willy-nilly in foster care. And so it makes certain, the Indian Child Welfare Act makes certain provisions. And one of them is that an Indian child, you know, it has preferences. So, you know, a child should be placed with their parents. And if not their parents, then, you know, members of their family. And if not members of their family, then an Indian family within the same tribe. And if then not in the same tribe, then an Indian family from perhaps another tribe. And it has these preferences, mm-hmm. which is some of what is at stake right now in this case that I mentioned earlier.
Right, exactly. Well, I appreciate you doing that. And we really appreciate all the new listeners too out there. Let's talk a little bit, and I'm going to open this up a little bit more with Wendy and Ogama, but let's talk a little bit about, you know, when we ran into each other today, we touched base about women's rights and the attack on women's rights. I'd love to hear, of course, your take, and then maybe have a little round conversation here in the last 5-6 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I've been working as a journalist the last several years, first at KFAI and most recently with Minnesota Public Radio as a freelance contractor. And so the way that I approach much of what's happening post-Roe is as a journalist. And I certainly have, you know, my own sort of personal take on what the overturning of Roe versus Wade means, and my own personal opinion about reproductive rights and so forth. What I really am interested in right now as a journalist is, you know, getting accurate, timely information out about the ways in which the overturning of Roe v. Wade will impact Native people across the U.S. Mm-hmm. Those, you know, the impacts are going to be felt differently from community to community, from state to state, and sometimes, you know, unevenly, right? There's going to be a lot of
there's going to be just a whole spectrum of experiences out there when it comes to these issues around both a woman's right to choose and access to abortion. So I'm passionate at this time about making sure that accurate information is reaching people where they live, and so that, you know, both for Native people and for non-Native communities who may have misperceptions about any number of issues that are connected to reproductive rights, Native communities, access to abortion, those things.
You know, we talked a little bit, too, about Minnesota is going to be holding on to women's rights as long as possible. But then we have a state like Wisconsin, and many tribes there are offering services and rides to other states, whether it's Illinois or Minnesota. I mean, they're working as a sovereign nation, and hopefully as a sovereign nation, they will not get indicted or convicted of any kind of crime.
Absolutely. I think one of the things that many people saw on social media, and I saw some of this myself right away, was this this notion that tribal lands were beyond the reach of some of these state laws that would now, after Roe, you know, do anything from prohibit and abortion to outright criminalize abortion, right? So we saw a lot of people sort of take to Facebook and other social media to say, oh, you know, like, what if reservations were to set up private clinics where abortions were legal? Then, you know, that would, you know, be outside of the ability of states and so forth to regulate. And you know, and I wasn't the only person to see this. I've talked with, you know, lots of folks who saw and heard that same thing. And it, for me, when I was, you know, that day, that Friday when you know, it was when that news was coming down, it was really frustrating to see people on social media making claims about, you know, about any of that, like, as though somehow magically overnight there was going to be abortion access in tribal communities where there isn't access in some of those states where they're located, these tribal communities are located. It was infuriating, quite frankly, to read some of that, even when people knew better, I guess, you know, you know, one thing that bears repeating is that Native women have not had good, if they so choose, they've not had good access to reproductive health or abortion through the IHS. Mm. The Hyde Amendment, and people are familiar with some of these laws, prohibits federal spending on abortion, and that means that it prohibits federal funds to be spent at IHS to provide abortion access. And it, frankly, it was appalling to me that, you know, those who were concerned about sort of, you know, the future of reproductive rights, that the first place that they look to, or one of the first places that they look to, were tribal communities where, you know, you know, that access has not existed in any real way for some years. That was frustrating. That was hard to hear. And I like some people, I spent, you know, some time that day, hopefully, meaningfully, respectfully correcting what I thought was some misinformation out there.
Right. Well, Ogema, we only got a minute left. Do you have a statement or a question?
I just want to, you know, echo what Melissa was saying about that level of frustration, too. I felt almost like I call it being voluntold. Somebody else is volunteering you for something and at the same time telling you that that's your job to do it now. And I usually say it in a humorous way, but I was feeling that definitely when Roe versus Wade got overturned about the tribal community, because I knew exactly what Melissa just said. Federal dollars cannot be spent on abortion, and most of IHA's funding is federal dollars. And we have not had that access, and for other people, especially non-Native people, to reach out and say, oh, well, they're sovereign, they could do this. Maybe they could, but are they? And is it right that you should receive services there or even talk about it first?
Wow, really good point. Hey, I want to just give a big peeny geegee for Melissa stopping in. Hopefully we'll get some reports from you out in New York too, because it sounds like you're on to another exciting trail in your life, and I really appreciate you stopping in, Melissa.
Robert, thanks for inviting me to stop by today. We got to work on our timing, so next time when the cat from Reservation Dog shows up, we're there front and center, you know. But thank you so much for inviting me. It is also great to see you, and it's always awesome to have the support of Native Roots Radio and all of its producers. Thanks so much for having me.
Wow, great interview. We'll be right back after this short break.
Stay with us.
Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States, and 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected. Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf. Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy. As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired. Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
Minnesotans age 65 plus might qualify for Health Partners Minnesota Senior Health Options. The plan includes personal support, coverage for medical prescription drugs and dental, plus over 30 extra benefits. Eligibility information is available at healthpartners.com/oneplan. Health Partners is a health plan that contracts with both Medicare and the Minnesota Medical Assistance Medicaid program to provide benefits of both programs to enrollees. Enrollment in Health Partners depends on contract renewal.
J&S Bean Factory is a Native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
This is Winona LaDuke of Honor the Earth, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio. I'm Awake.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
Howl!
Our dogs don't even move. Hey, I want to introduce Wendy, my awesome, beautiful wife and sidekick, reporting from New York. And we're talking about our sacred animals, and the pressure's on. It's been a great show, Wen.
It has been a great show. I hope I don't ruin it. Hey, everybody. My name is Hanaji Hihani, and that means cares for them. I was given that name by my Dega Curtis. Curtis goes by Mashke Hanajinga, which means walks on white clouds. I'm a humane policy volunteer leader for the Humane Society of the United States, and I work on animal issues at the local and state level. And it's always my pleasure to do this work. And I have really good news today, and I always love to share good news. I have a friend on Facebook who is also his name is Mark Ayers, and Mark is the Illinois State Director for the Humane Society of the United States. And I'm friends with him on Facebook, and I see all the great work that he and his group there in Illinois are doing. And I just want to give him a great shout out for doing his great work. He's pretty awesome guy. Robert, remember when we were talking, and Ogama too, when we talk about the pet store ordinance. So this is a pet mm-hmm. store ordinance, and we have a few here in Minnesota, in St. Paul, Roseville, Carver. There's a couple of other cities in Minnesota that have the pet store ordinance bill. And what this mm-hmm. bill does is it prohibits pet stores from selling cats and dogs from that are derived from puppy mills. So we want to cut off that pipeline to the puppy mills. And Illinois had a similar bill passed, which was fantastic. Yeah. But this here's what's happening. So some of these pet stores are reorganizing, and they're getting their business going again, and they are operating as licensed dog dealers. So they're the same crappy pet stores that are getting the same dogs from these horrible puppy mills. And if anybody doesn't know what a puppy mill is, I know I've talked about it many times. We have so many new listeners. I just want to bring them up to speed. So a puppy mill is a large, or it could be a small, facility where dogs and cats are breeded over and over again, and their puppies and kittens are given are sold online. Most of them go to the pet stores. But these dogs and cats spend their whole adult life in cages, and they don't have any socialization. They don't really get very good vet care. Our dog Gracie, who is a puppy mill survivor, spent 7 years of her life in a puppy mill in a cage in an indoor facility where somebody came by once a week and filled up her automatic water and food dish. And that was the socialization that she got. So we want to end those puppy mills. And what happened is that thanks to the work of Governor J.B. Pritzker and the Illinois Department of Agriculture, puppy mill peddlers operating, as I said, as dog dealers have been sent notices of relocation. And this is really huge. This is a lot of work. And they have a press release that's dated August 4th, 2022. And it is a press release of the relocation to these dog dealers operating in violation of the Animal Welfare Act. And this is Springfield, Illinois Department of Agriculture has provided petitions of license revocation to three businesses alleging that were operating as pet shops in Illinois without pet shop operations. And these are three places here, and they the name of them is Fur Babies, and with locations in Rockford, Aurora, and in Lombard. So these places have been notified that they're no longer allowed to do this and that they need to move along. So thank you very much, Mark Ayers, again, for your wonderful work with this important, you know, pet store ordinance that we have to keep working on. And once we have the ordinances in place, they have to be, the pet stores have to be looked at. There's people mm-hmm. who have to go and inspect them to make sure that they're not breaking this law. So I'm really happy that this is happening and that people are stepping up to do it. The other thing I wanted to talk about tonight, it was a little bit of something that I just kind of really looked at recently, and somebody was talking about it on Facebook because there was a cat in the neighborhood that was killing a lot of birds. I just said to myself, well, you know, I know a lot of people like to let their cats out, and some cats just can't be kept indoors. I had I had an outdoor cat for many years, many, many, many years ago. He was getting into a lot of trouble, and he'd come home from fights, right? And he'd be all scratched up and everything. And it really took us a long time for him to be okay being an indoor cat, but we did finally do it. But statistically speaking, they kill the most birds. So an outdoor cat, outdoor cats, I have this statistics right here. So windows where birds fly into windows, that's the number one killer of birds. The second one is cats, outdoor cats. So it's really unbelievable. And I have the numbers here. So how many birds do cats kill every year? Just in the United States, outdoor cats kill roughly 2.4 billion birds a year. This is the result of tens of millions of outdoor cats. So isn't that unbelievable? That was a really unbelievable. I didn't really realize that cats kill that many birds, but they do. 2.4 billion birds every year. We're losing a lot of our bird species, so there are some, like the Audubon Society and other animal advocates who are interested in birds are really worried about this statistic because cats really do it. I know, like, some people are like, well, I have a bell on their collar and the bell kind of helps the birds, and it might in the U.S. outdoor it kills. Domestic cats are one of the world's worst non-native invasive species.
Isn't that crazy? I read something similar to what you're talking about, Wendy, and mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys remember Silent Spring by Rachel Carlson, but that's kind of what it reminded me of. Like, all the songbirds are being killed mm-hmm. by these cats. You know, it's not DDT this time, it's your neighborhood cats. So you need to keep your cats inside if you're going to be having a cat. We have three cats and none of them go outside except for a couple of times where they've snuck out and we didn't want them out. But we don't let our cats out. And for that reason, especially that they kill wildlife, it's not just birds, it's bunnies, it's other things that are in your neighborhood that also deserve to live.
And absolutely.
Cats are one of the few animals that will also kill for pleasure, like human beings as well. So they don't have to kill the bird just to eat it. Sometimes they kill the bird just because they want to play. So
right, and these birds are not, too. I mean, these cats are just not in the United States. I think elsewhere in the world it's even worse, where people mm-hmm. like their animals out. But outdoor cats contribute to 33 extinctions globally. So if you have a kitty who likes to go out, try to wrangle them up. Oops, I just dropped my phone. And it's hard. They're going to cry. They're going to want to go out. But it works. I've done it, and you can have your kitty be an indoor cat, so he doesn't have to kill so many birds. I know I'm going to get some hate mail, but I'm ready for it.
All right. I'll get the address out there. Hey, from Chief Plenty Coops, the ground on which we stand on is sacred ground. It is the blood of our ancestors and birds. We'll be right back next tomorrow. We're still here. We are the seventh generation.
Free Leonard Peltier.